Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/tripcast. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Texas Talking. What was that you said?
Texas Talking.
Gonna hoop up inside your head.
Texas Talking.
Hi, this is Nathan Bernier. I'm the local host of All Things Considered on KUT in Austin. I used to think these intros for the Tribcast were really dumb until Ben invited me to do it. Now I say they're A-OK. And now here's the Tribcast crew. Take it away, whoever's hosting.
And thank you, Nathan. This is Ben Philpott from KUT as well. And you know, I told Nathan actually that I was hosting it, so I don't know why he decided to forget me. But anyway, I'm filling
You're
in.
You're kind of forgettable.
Well, that's true. I'm filling in for Reeve Hamilton today, who is somewhere over Los Angeles bitching about the number of stories he's written on higher ed this week.
Maybe we should send him on vacation all the time.
Breaking news. You know, here hosting the Tribcast this week with, as always, the great cast of Editor-in-Chief and CEO Evan Smith.
Hey, Reeve.
Damn it. Executive Editor Ross Ramsey.
Hey, Steve.
And Editor Emily Ramshaw.
Great to hear from you, Nathan.
Oh, my Lord.
Nobody called you John Ailey. That's actually...
Well, that's true.
I would declare victory and get the hell out of here.
Today we will talk about...
I hear you like crepe myrtles.
Don't we all? Today, let's see, is there anything to talk about today?
No.
Nothing big at all?
Nothing at all.
Okay, so yeah, the list is out. At least the names are out, if not the reasons are out, for best and worst of the legislature done by Texas Monthly every session since 74? Is that right?
73.
So sorry.
This is the 21st 63rd, biennial
right.
list.
63rd legislature.
So just to make you listen for another couple of minutes, we're going to hit two other topics first, real quickly. Number one, we have some maps. Is that right?
The Senate committee voted to ratify the maps that were used in the 2012 elections for both the Senate, the House, and Congress, and for all three, actually. And that goes now to the full Senate. The House hasn't voted
yet. So
no changes. This is what Greg Abbott wanted. And presumably, if you get ratification from the legislature of the court-drawn maps that were used in 2012, you can knock out one line of the federal litigation that's been going on. And Greg Abbott has a simpler job
as a
lawyer.
So how about all those hearings?
Well, yeah.
This is the Input Schminput Act of 2013, right?
Thank you for your kind words. We're going to do what we were going to do anyway. So we'll see what they do.
Now, the House had another roving hearing today in Houston, I believe,
right,
on the maps as well. Are we expecting anything different from the House?
You know, I don't know what to expect. I mean, the House has a little bit more political diversity on the committee.
You could argue that Burka did redistricting a favor by distracting Trey Martinez Fisher,
right,
by putting him on the best list. His head's going to be in the stars for the next couple of days, and will not be making mischief on.
There goes Evan screwing up your timeline.
I know,
talking about the best and worst list.
Well, the vice chair of
it's a secret, Reeve.
You know, the vice chair of the House committee is Yvonne Davis. You know, this is going to be. I think that's going to be an interesting hearing.
And, not pictured on either list.
And the litigation track that the Attorney General is trying to get rid of is the one that was in Washington, D.C. that included findings that the House had intentionally discriminated in drawing its maps. So I think the House hearings are going to be a lot more contentious.
Well, let's be clear. The Senate voted the maps out, but they voted the maps out along party lines. Right.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah, but yeah,
well,
that's
but
right.
But just so we're saying, this is not a kumbaya moment for the Senate.
It's redistricting. It was never going
to
be kumbaya.
Right. So then, to the degree that we think this is going to be a party line deal, there is opportunity or likelihood Democrats going to make mischief in the House.
If it's a party,
it may be to no effect.
If it's a party line deal, then the Republicans will draw the maps that they want to draw, and it may be noisy.
They're not going to just sit there quietly.
Right.
Is the point.
Right.
The good news is they have some other things now to fight over too.
Right. And thank you. That's even a much better segue because it's what we wanted to talk about next, as opposed to.
It wasn't until you started talking about it.
Oh, damn it. That's right. We've got stuff added to the call this week. Finally, the governor has listened to the far right and other people and has added things to the call, including transportation funding, juvenile justice, a mandatory sentence for capital offenders that are juveniles, and the big one, or I guess maybe one of the big ones, abortion regulation and all that, facilities and everything, the bills that we saw during the regular session. Why don't we just start with the maybe not so controversial one, transportation funding. It looks like we've got an agreement on SJR2, which takes $1 billion before it gets to the rainy day fund and puts it towards transportation. Or
I don't
something.
Know. We have an agreement. I think we've got an agreement to consider it. The House seems to be allergic to debt and to anything that would touch the sacred rainy day fund. And what this does is split the stream of money that flows into the rainy day fund, sends half of it to the rainy day fund and half of it to the highway fund. So the rainy day fund wouldn't lose any money. It would just gain money more slowly. And so the question is whether the House and the Senate will go there, whether you can get 100 votes in the House. And so far, you haven't been able to get 100 votes for anything that looked like debt or rainy day fund. So we'll see.
This was the big miss. This is what everybody in both parties mm-hmm. acknowledged was the big miss right. of the regular session was not dealing with transportation.
Right. And it was on right. Perry's list.
Yeah. Right. I mean, when you talk about the far right and controversy and all that, I would say that transportation is not in that bucket. I think you acknowledge that. And even the juvenile justice issue that he put on the call yesterday is not really a controversial issue from an ideological standpoint, is it? I mean,
no,
it's
it is from a legal standpoint.
It's a legal issue.
Yeah, there's a question of whether what they're right. trying to do is even constitutional and whether it would pass court muster.
Where this special session has gotten to be controversial from an ideological or partisan standpoint, in contrast to what we were told was this session where everybody got along and they
right,
dealt
the
with
Kumbaya
priorities
session.
And everything else, it's redistricting and abortion.
Right.
Are the two things that give the lie to the idea that we're just going to land a plane safely with no trouble.
You know, but so if we all kind of thought that redistricting might be coming at the end of the session because of this idea that Abbott has of codifying the interim maps and then you get court preclearance essentially. But on abortion, do we really think that anything's going to change this time around? I mean, I guess
they're going to get this done.
Well, the first question for me is the lieutenant governor made it quite clear at the beginning of the special session that you would not have a blocker bill for redistricting, but on other items, a block and other special sessions, maybe that's the key phrase, mm-hmm. a blocker bill would be in place.
I'm not sure he committed to anything right. as far as that goes.
I mean, I have to wonder if Perry added abortion issues to the call, you know, at the request of Dewhurst, who was really, really pushing for this, but not
and
with
about 70 members of
and
the,
70
of the
members
House,
of the House,
right?
but not with any clear intention that abortion was necessarily
well,
going to get.
Somebody
done.
Asked me, is that a loser then for Perry if he adds this to the call and it doesn't happen? And I said, no, I don't think so, because it allows every Republican that wants to go out and say, boy, I tried.
Right,
and frankly,
exactly.
Those
frankly,
damn Democrats
giving them that opportunity.
Frankly, any more than Perry putting sanctuary cities on the list of emergency items last session, but getting nothing for right. that by the end was
right.
a loser. For Perry, which is to say, it wasn't really.
Right. Also,
governor puts abortion on the call, nothing happens. The governor says he tried.
And it
well.
Was the Democrats' fault.
Right. He says, I tried as well.
And that call also did not sort of lend itself directly to fetal pain.
Right.
I mean,
although
I think,
Although Lieutenant
know,
Governor Dewhurst put out a statement talking about the pre-born
right.
yesterday. He is clearly thinking that this is going to be the fetal pain call.
Because that's, I think, that the way that Dewhurst wants to interpret it. But the language in the call is really, you know, almost seems like it's more directed at abortion facilities than it is at abortion.
Which
you know,
would be the dual bill.
Which would be the dual, the bill related to sort of surgical centers and where abortions could be performed.
Is that, do we expect also the one where it would tie every abortion clinic to a hospital having admitting rights?
Right.
And which so is a big deal with the rural areas. Number one,
really
if there's only
deal.
One hospital, they could deny it and you're dead, or not dead, the ability to get an abortion is gone. Or you're in a rural area where there are no hospitals within the 30 miles, I think, was in the bill the original time.
Right. You know, the first hearing on this is on Thursday. And I think what they're going to end up doing is sort of filing an omnibus bill that you know, lumps in all of these different types of legislation. But I just don't know if there is the ability in either of these chambers to pass that kind of legislation right now.
Well, the House didn't even bother bringing it to the floor. I mean, I guess their excuse in the regular session was, well, we're waiting to see if the Senate can do anything. And if they can't, what are we worried about?
They didn't have the votes in committee.
Right.
It didn't have to get out of the House.
Right. Right.
Well.
Right.
You know, and remember that it was the Speaker who said at the very beginning of the session, we want to conduct our business for the next 140 days without distractions. I think that was the word
right.
he used.
Right.
But which everyone interpreted to mean no uncomfortable, messy, divisive social issues. And he got through the session pretty much without any distractions by that definition. So we get into the special now. Has the Speaker's desire for distractions changed? No.
No, but all of the things that he stopped or had a hand in stopping or, you know, told him, you know, the House just isn't going to go here seems to be the list for this thing,
right,
starting
right.
with redistricting.
But procedurally, there's no greater chance for redistricting if the Speaker wanted to act as a one-man blocker bill.
Right.
There's no greater chance for abortion procedurally to get through this House than there was during the session.
Right.
Right. Whereas in the Senate, if the lieutenant governor said we're going to say King's X to the two-thirds rule, mm-hmm. it would be much easier for abortion
right.
to proceed along a greased glide path there, but not in the House. In the House, it would not be as easy a route to passage if the Speaker elected to assert himself.
You know, the Speaker doesn't have to assert himself here. I mean, he had
he
to keep
just let the process work.
Well,
he
had but, to, you know, that assumes well, that it would be without his direction of the process.
But the coalition that he had to maintain to get the bills that he wanted out of the special session is, for the moment, not important to him because the bills that were important to him during the session are out of the way. And, you know, we've got a session here that's made up, with the exception of transportation, of a bunch of things that he's like, you know, if they want to vote on this or the governor wants them to vote on this, that's fine.
But
and
what
it
if he needs...
doesn't mess with him on other bills necessarily because
well,
there aren't
can't
any other
get,
bills.
What if he can't get the votes on transportation without moving on the abortion legislation?
It's the Senate's idea. This isn't the transportation idea the House started with.
Mm-hmm. No, but I think Emily's asking a different question.
Right.
So if the House becomes the obstacle to transportation funding and they become the obstacle to transportation funding because the Democrats refuse to in theory here, the Tea Party Republicans are not going to play, as they were not willing to play
well,
during the
and
beginning.
Transportation, I'll say here, is a two-thirds bill.
Right, you've got to have 100 votes.
Right. Well, then the Democrats are that much more necessary.
Well, if you want to pass it.
Well, but if you want to pass it, right? So if you want to pass it, you need the Democrats, but the Democrats may decide to stage the equivalent of a walkout over abortion, and they may say, we will trade our willingness to join on the two-thirds vote on transportation for some ending of the abortion debate.
How much of this is Perry filling time, giving us all these distractions so we stop watching his every move on what he's going to do next?
I don't know. I mean, if he is running for president, doesn't he want... It, maybe not us to watch his every move, but doesn't he want the nation to watch his every move?
I think he's not running for re-election and that he's just sort of killing time between now and that announcement.
I think if you don't want people to watch you, you don't call special sessions. I think you just go quietly into the night, you do your vetoes and signatures on Father's Day, and you go quiet. He's clearly not
unless,
going quiet.
Unless you want to establish your place at the far right end of the table. In contrast to those squishes who are talking about running for president in 2016, I'm the governor who refused to cave on Medicaid. I'm the governor who said, hell yes, we're going to ratify a conservative redistricting plan. I'm the governor who said, hell yes, we're going to limit the number of weeks in which you can pass an abortion. I'm the governor who did.
That's not what it said.
Well, hold on. The pre-born bill.
I think you're wrong. I think she's right. I think this is a facilities call. It's not a fetal pain call. I don't think you can do fetal pain under the way this thing's.
You don't think you can do
fetal
pain?
I think they'll try.
What does the exact call say? Isn't it abortion related or is it only related to facilities?
Facilities.
It's facility. It's procedures. I believe it's procedures performed at abortion facilities.
So are you making?
I thought it was procedures and facilities.
Are you making news here? Because what you're saying, basically, by your interpretation of the call.
No, I'm not making news.
Well, you are. Because what you're saying by your interpretation of the call is that, contrary to what the lieutenant governor press released about yesterday, and contrary to the wishes of a majority of the Republicans in the House who sent that letter to the governor, that the fetal pain bill is off the table based on your interpretation of the
call. I don't think that's the case, that it's off the table.
Well, if it's not off the table, then it's on. And if it's on, then I stick to what
I said.
I'm
just saying, if he was really going for sort of red meat issues, first of all, why wouldn't he announce, call it fetal pain, or, you know, do it immediately when he called a special session instead of sort of doing it as an afterthought, you know.
He did everything as an afterthought except for redistricting.
Yeah, maybe you can. Regulation of abortion procedures, providers, and facilities.
Procedures, that's 20 ways. And the fact is, North Dakota and Arkansas have given the governor some cover. He can say, mm-hmm. by comparison, the Texas law that's on the books would be positively liberal in terms of the number of weeks.
I don't think he's allowed to say that.
But either they're all unconstitutional or none is unconstitutional based on Roe. And this goes back to the conversation you had with Sarah Davis earlier in the session, in which she floated the possibility that the pre-born bill would not be constitutional based on the fetal viability test in Roe versus Wade.
Right.
Right?
So, I mean, I think, you know, again, for me, the bigger question is what his actions, you know, what his actions mean for his future. I mean, this stuff with Rosemary Lemberg, you know, again, the Travis County DA who was convicted of drunken driving, served time in jail, and has so far refused to step down. And Perry, I guess, said this week, was it this week?
Yep.
Perry said this week that, you know, he or has told multiple sources, I guess, this week that he would, you know, exercise a line item veto in the budget for funding for the public integrity unit unless Rosemary Lemberg stepped down from her post. Did I explain that in the right way?
I think you did. Yeah. I think it's treacherous ground for the governor to be on, to be inserting himself into this sort of a thing, because I think he gives, frankly, I think he gives Rosemary Lemberg now a narrative argument to resist stepping down. I think that the governor poked a bear with a stick on this subject. And I think he galvanizes the people who might otherwise be inclined to let Rosemary Lemberg go off. You know, the joke is really that when Rosemary Lemberg was saying call Greg, she meant call Greg Abbott. The fact is that that Perry going after Rosemary Lemberg so frontally as he appears to be doing, I think, helps her rather than hurts her, makes it less likely rather than more likely that she resigns, and galvanizes the opposition to the governor more so than the support for Rosemary Lemberg, but does the same thing, has the same effect.
Well, and they've already started using the idea that some of the things that the state is doing that might be under investigation by Lemberg's office would stop being under investigation if the governor cut off the money. CPRIT is one,
yeah.
You know, all of these things like this. So, you know, they begin to, you know, if you're lobbying for Lemberg to stay, or if you're one of the Democrats who thinks she ought to stay in office so Perry can't appoint a Republican.
It looks like a naked political play.
Right.
The governor's part. And
well,
frankly,
and it is a naked political play.
You know,
play.
Go back to the beginning of all this Lemberg stuff when it was said that the governor would appoint Terry Keel potentially to be the replacement for Lemberg. The speculation was. I think that one interesting byproduct of all of this discussion is maybe it forces the governor now to negotiate with people who would otherwise stand in the way or attempt to stand in the way of Lemberg's departure.
Right.
And the governor now says, well, okay, what if I agree to appoint Mindy Montford, or I agree to appoint a Democrat, but somebody who is a Democrat more of my liking or temperament to that job?
Or even a placeholder who won't run.
Mm-hmm. Or a placeholder who won't run. It gets into a more interesting political.
If he appoints any Republican, they're a placeholder who won't win.
Well, last words. I mean, you know, you've got look to San Antonio, a blue county bear with a red district attorney. I mean, it's not unprecedented.
I guess,
that a Republican
but it's not
here. I mean, you don't think so,
you know,
but it could happen.
Well, I mean, it'll happen about the time that Texas turns blue.
Could happen.
The politics on this just have annoyed me the whole time. But
almost got a Diet Coke
never,
spit take.
That has never worked for you. Yeah, the Danny Thomas spit take was almost right there.
He would have spit on me, so yes. I'm glad that.
Do you
didn't
know who
happen.
Danny Thomas is, Reeve?
I do know who Danny Thomas is. Yes, I do.
I could find.
Don't know. Marlo Thomas's father is not accurate. That's not enough.
Okay, you've labored through this long. Why don't we talk about the best and
thank
worst?
God.
There we go.
Oh, man.
Evan can hardly wait.
Okay, Evan, you can sit down.
So here's the question. How do we want to do this?
Read the list.
I was going to add. Yeah, do we want to read the list?
Best.
Why don't, read it and then say agree or disagree.
Okay, I'll read it, and then we all have to say agree or disagree. But hold it. Agree or disagree in terms of whether they ought to be on the list, or agree or disagree in terms of whether we are. Is it more about
it's whether
merit,
they should be on the list?
I can't believe that they did it for Texas Monthly's own reasons. What's the merit? Are we going to really out
for whatever,
ourselves here
for whatever standpoint? Reason? I don't have a list, so I'm not going to give you my list.
No, I don't want to do agree or disagree.
Right,
no,
right.
I'm a chicken shit on this. I don't want to do that.
Okay.
Because we're in the business of not
anybody
making lists.
Okay, anybody can agree if they want to. I mean, there's some people on this list.
I edited nine of those stories.
Does anyone want to agree or disagree with Evan real quickly?
Is this where we vote Evan off the island?
Please.
You're
put me out of my misery.
You're burying your lead. Read your list.
God, carry me out of here on your gourd. Okay. Bests. Jimmy. Well, that wasn't that weird sounding.
Come on, just keep going.
Bests. Jimmy Don Acock. Wendy Davis, Robert Duncan, who is turning out to be the Bill Ratliff or Steve Wollin's default choice every 2 years. He gets on the list almost by default. Charlie Guerin. Michael Quinn Sullivan might have something to say about that, maybe. Chuy Hinojosa. Interesting in view of all the stuff with the med school.
Well, right? And the new university.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Martinez Fisher.
Yeah, we'll be back to that one. Keep reading.
We will. Okay. Jim Pitts. Speaker Strauss seemingly violating Texas Monthly's historic rule. Maybe it's more like the
Evan Smith rule.
Well, no, it wasn't my rule.
I think it's more of a tradition.
I had nothing to do with it. But it's not common at all to put, and in fact, it's usually not the case that you do it, put leadership on the list.
Well, it's a brave new world.
Letitia, it is, that Jake. He's such a radical. Boy, he really is. He seems like such a hippie to me by comparison to me. Letitia Van Depute and Tommy Williams is the best list. The worst list is Lon Burnham. Apparently they have a problem with facial hair. John Corona, so that means that
he doesn't have any facial hair.
You don't just get on the best list if you lost a lot of weight. You get on the worst list also. Susan Combs, that's weird to me because
she's not a legislator.
She's not even a legislator.
Right. She was on the best list when she was a legislator, by
the way. Naomi Gonzalez and Ron Reynolds both made it on the worst list because apparently getting arrested is
a prereq.
Reason enough, right? That's fine. Kelly Hancock, well, I hope we'll come back to Kelly Hancock because that's the one that leaves me scratching my head a little bit.
Yeah.
Harvey Hildebrand. Joan Huffman.
Apparently, if you get called a bitch in a hearing.
Right, Joan Huffman. This Ruth M. of San Antonio writes.
The session just keeps getting worse.
Exactly. Crowdsourcing the list. Ruth McClendon suggested that one. Dan Patrick, which I think is an interesting choice because there was a Bull of the Brazos thing there. He didn't end up getting the best worst kind of combined award. That was Sylvester Turner.
Is that what Bull of the Brazos is?
It's kind of a best and worst.
Embodies the best and worst of the session.
Right. And then Van Taylor, which, you know, even Erica Greeter, who was one of the four people at Texas Monthly who tweeted, who was responsible for the list, Erica Greeter tweeted, by popular demand,
I think if you'd had a legislative vote, or particularly a House vote, Van Taylor would have made it.
So what do we think about the list? There are a lot of people on this list I think we've talked about internally here in the run-up to the list we all suspected would make it, and you know I think we can say that that's on the merits. Best and worst.
Low-drama session, low-drama list.
You think it's a low-drama list?
Yeah, I just, you know, there wasn't a lot of sort of dramatic, apocalyptic, oh my God, did you see that moments? There were a couple, but you know there wasn't a session with a lot of that kind of stuff. And so it wasn't a session where you come out with a list and you say, oh, this name goes with that moment, and this name goes with that moment, and you know,
so Acock,
like 2003.
Acock makes the list because he passed education reform, and the governor signed HB 5.
Well, and he passed it because he stepped into a role that's kind of a historical role in the House, where somebody of one party or the other can walk to the front mic and say, "Members, I've worked really hard on this. Trust me," and they go, "Okay, we'll do that." Acock seems to be that guy right now.
But Eisler was not a best. Grusendorf was not a best.
And they weren't that guy.
You and know, also, Wollin, don't you remember Wollins what happened at the end of the session?
Wollins could do that when he was here. Jack Vowell could do that when he was here. It's one of those things where, you know, members, this is really complicated. I know a lot of you campaigned on it. I've taken care of this and this and this. Trust me. And if you look at the votes on Acock's legislation, and if you watch the sort of the comportment of the House during the debates on his legislation, he's that guy. He's the guy that could walk up to the mic and everybody was like, okay, he's got it. We're good.
Does the chair of appropriations and the chair of finance always make the best list?
No.
I think unless they really screw it up.
Although Ogden has made the list a number of years.
Right.
I think this was a year in which the budget, speaking of no drama or low drama, the budget was not that, it wasn't no drama because you had the fight over the funding mechanism for the rainy day fund, and especially on the House side, there was more pushback on the budget.
I thought Otto might be on this list on the best side. He seemed to play a much bigger role this year in all that, you know, budget stuff.
The budget stuff. I think you get on this year because of the budget stuff, because you had all this money to spend. You had conservative groups within the state and the legislature that absolutely wanted to save or give back in tax cuts almost all of that money that we had left over, to have a quote conservative budget, to have Republican leadership passing these bills that were expanding the amount of money we spent. And to shepherd it through with opposition.
When I look at this list of 10 on the best list, I think there is no one on this list who is a conservative who would not be attacked by the Michael Quinn Sullivans or the TPPFs of the world. You know, Acock, Duncan, Guerin, Pitts, Strauss, Williams are your...
They clearly went for the mainstream establishment guys and not for the insurgents from either the sophomore class or the freshman class.
But what did the insurgents... I mean, you know, what did the insurgents stick in their... What's the feather in their cap this year that would put them on the best list?
Only thing is maybe forcing the legislature to allow the people of Texas to vote up or down on $2 billion for water.
Who's missing from the, let's do it this way, who's missing?
Well,
Ritter,
I was, yeah, there's no right. water. Yeah, there's
Alan
no
Ritter didn't get on this list
water.
For getting a $2 billion water bill through a house that's allergic to debt.
Right.
And I mean, and to taking money out of the rainy day fund. I think that's well, a real miss here.
If you consider the three big things, so it was education, it was transportation, and water. Transportation, nothing happened. You've got Jimmy Don with education, but there was no water representation.
So where is Ritter is a question I have.
You know, Perry wanted a bunch of tax relief, and none of the tax relief guys are on here. None of the people that are, you know, very few of the people that are sort of on the lists of I'm going to run for statewide office and here are my achievements are on this list.
What's the rule on freshmen on the best and worst?
Typically no freshmen. And so we'll come to that because I can't think of a freshman who might have made the best list. But there was some thought that maybe Jonathan Stickland would have been in consideration for the worst list. And I'll ask Paul Burke of that tomorrow when we're together at the Austin Club.
Right.
Also not on the best list are either Donna Howard or Sarah Davis, who I suspected one or the other might make it for having negotiated or been part of the negotiation on the compromise for women's health funding. Mm-hmm. And Donna Howard maybe had an extra opportunity to be on the list for her advocacy for disclosure and ethics reform, even though it was unsuccessful. Maybe the fact that it was not successful was a problem, although, again, the debate about this list historically has been, is it process or is it outcomes?
Right.
And so the fact that it didn't succeed is theoretically irrelevant to the question of whether she would have been on the list. The Democrats on this list, there are four Democrats on the best list, which is maybe one more than I might have thought. Typically, it lays out, not intentionally, but it does organically, as sort of proportional to the breakdown of the legislature. Pardon me. So the four on this list are Wendy Davis, Chuy Hinojosa, Trey Martinez-Fisher, and Letitia Vandepute. I'd like to hear both of you talk about, all three of you, talk about why you think all, some, or none of these deserve to be on the best list.
I was very surprised by Wendy Davis. Just, you know, I didn't cover the Senate as much as I covered the House, but from the early hearings that I went to, she seemed to be kind of a one-trick pony gadfly. Education spending, and every committee hearing, every time anything was brought up, it was, well, you know, but remember education hearing. And it, from early in the session, it just seemed that she was annoying people as opposed to doing other things, but you know, apparently she's turned that around by the end of the session.
Will Wynn's going to kick your ass, Ben.
Well, he probably will.
What is the Vandepute claim to fame from this session?
Maybe because she stood up for rigor on curriculum.
Rigor.
I don't know. I have no disrespect or disregard for Letitia Vandepute, but
yeah,
I can't think about what is the one thing that she did this session. I look forward to seeing the write-up.
If you go down this list, is there one thing for each of these people? You know, I mean,
On Senator Hinojosa, quite frankly, to my mind, the up periscope on Senator Hinojosa this session was the controversy over the medical school in South Texas.
He won.
So is that it? So we're rewarding
winners? Process? Because that process has been pretty darn messy.
So he drops the microphone and walks off stage?
He's a big player in the budget. He's a big player in a lot of the negotiations on, you know, a lot of things. I mean, he's kind of a swing vote among the Democrats.
Right.
Don't you think that getting that school, though, is enough?
Did he get it? I think Eddie Lucio is on line one,
Ben. Eddie Lucio would say that he got it, yeah.
You know, I'm not sure that this is a one man. I mean, that's the point.
One of the things that really prompted this was, you know, when UT started dragging its heels, suddenly Hinojosa was playing footsie with John Sharp over at Texas A&M, and UT got interested again.
Well,
UT would say they didn't drag their
heels.
You
and I both know that Trey Martinez Fisher hates to have his name mentioned in public.
He hates it, especially
when it's mentioned on the podcast. So I'm loath to even mention him now.
Magazine is tanning booth.
So what about this? I mean, it's interesting because he was a figure of some controversy in the last session.
He traded.
But you said to me earlier that you thought actually that it sets up kind of naturally for him to be on the best list.
You know, of all the ways to play, he's chosen two extremes. One of them was he's been at the back mic screaming and jumping up and down and doing points of order and being, you know, the sand in your underwear for a couple of sessions now. He's been that guy at the back mic. He's like, oh, brother, Trey's at the back mic. This time he didn't go to the back mic hardly at all. And when he did, it was to say, you know, what time are we going to lunch? Mm-hmm. He spent most of his time in the back hall negotiating deals and I think probably helping Strauss hold together a coalition of Democrats and moderate Republicans that replaced last session's coalition of moderate and conservative Republicans. And I think that's really the different mark on the House this time, and he's largely responsible.
Much less of a bomb thrower than he's been. I mean, again, he had, I think, a really sort of grown-up, mature session as opposed to some of the sessions where he was just at the back mic, you know, lobbing crap.
And so in the end, contrary to the vote of Democrats, not Yvonne Davis, not Mondo Wally, not Abel Herrero, not Chris Turner, the leader of the Democrats this session, in theory in the House, is Trey. He's the only one of the four Democrats from the House on the list.
Strauss
the
had
only
a,
Democrat on the House in the House on the list.
Strauss had a big gripe last session. One of his big gripes last session was that you couldn't go to the Democrats and find a person to negotiate with, that it was like negotiating with 40 different people instead of negotiating with one person who could really pull the votes of all the Democrats. And I think, you know, the Democrats heard that, and that's what kind of – and I also think, you know, Trey Martinez Fisher is the best known of the two, but I think Yvonne Davis has a lot to do with this. She's very good on a floor level. She's not the best at the mic, but she's really good at sort of shepherding those troops
and
on the floor
fairness,
level. And I think the two of them together changed the game.
In fairness to her, she was a grown-up this session as well.
Right.
She didn't have any visible temper tantrums or do anything that would have undermined her leadership.
I'm not sure I would have put either one of them on the list, but I think that's why he's
so
on.
So among the worst, let's say, you know, we'll accept Van Taylor, write Van Taylor into the record.
Right.
Ron Reynolds and Naomi Gonzalez, clearly it wasn't on the substance. It was on, you know, their
right.
criminal records or their issues that they've got.
Well, for Naomi, it was about the substance.
But I'm pumped.
Yeah. Well played.
Thank you. Tip your waitresses. She's here all week. Two shows on Sunday. So let's say that those guys plus Van Taylor we can sort of put to the side. Dan Patrick is interesting. You know, it's a little bit like, look, HB5 got signed. The likelihood is that the charter school expansion gets signed. It's a little bit like Barbara Streisand back when Prince of Tides got 15 nominations but none for Best Director, and she said, what, it directed itself? Doesn't Dan Patrick have a Barbara Streisand claim on saying, excuse me, consequential education reform. I was chair of the Senate committee. It wasn't just Jimmy Don Acock.
Well,
it was both of us.
There's a certain truth to the, you know, the idea that a Republican in Dan Patrick's position can take Texas Monthly's worst list as an in-kind contribution. I mean, there's
So actually, he's thrilled about this.
Well,
he gets to beat.
He may go cry in private, but I think when you get out on the stuff, you get to say,
thing,
you know, look, the liberal media doesn't like me. When he was at Trib Live a couple weeks ago, or last week, or whenever that was.
Yeah.
You know, he seemed sort of reconciled to all the positions he'd taken. He looked like he felt he had a good session. If you talk to other senators, they were really frustrated with the way he ran his committee. One of the early complaints in the session was that you can get anything out of the Education Committee as long as it has Dan Patrick's name on it. He voted against the budget after voting. He voted for it coming out of committee. He voted against the conference committee report.
So I wonder if actually it's about the budget.
There's
Maybe
a bunch
it's about
of,
the budget.
You know, there's a bunch of stuff like that. There was a lot of noise in it in the Senate. But if you're one of Dan Patrick's constituents, I'm not sure you're unhappy with
and
it.
And so if you run against Paul Burka, D. Galveston,
right.
coming out of this list,
right.
it's an unfair characterization of Paul, but you get my point.
Right.
You know, if you get to run against this list, then that's a good thing.
I'm in a Republican primary running against the media. This is good, right?
I just felt, I mean, I don't know that this puts you on the worst list. I felt like he didn't have a great session. I mean, in terms of he was given everything that he wanted, essentially. He was given the keys to the candy store by being the public education chair. And
well, the fact that he ended the session with there being threats from Tommy Williams to strip him, to orchestrate a stripping of his chairmanship, whether or not that actually happens or was ever going to happen,
right?
That may be the reason in the end, now that I'm thinking about it, that he ended up on the worst list.
Why is Harvey Hildebrand on the worst list?
Sartorial?
You know, he passed the tax cut bill and then wouldn't negotiate, and it went over to Hager. This was like a precursor of the controller's race that we're going to see in 2014, because they're both on the list.
Didn't he vote against budget, too?
I'm not sure on that.
I thought he was a no vote.
And basically, Hager said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this. And handed back a bill, and the House ate it. I mean, you know, Harvey's bill just got rewritten. He just didn't get anything of – whenever he had his hands on something, it didn't get done. And there were several things that they needed done that, you know, they basically, like the tax bill, they had to take away from him and say, you know, somebody else fix this.
Corona?
Ask Jay Root. I mean, you know, seriously. I mean, this guy has turned his office into a personal piggy bank, even if he's a good senator, even to the extent
Hashtag business as usual.
Well, even to the extent that, you know, he's gotten done, you know, maybe even great things for his constituents. This guy's getting rich off of this office. He ought to be on some list for that.
And Huffman, we talked about. Why is Kelly Hancock on the worst list?
No idea.
Do you have any idea?
I have no clue.
Do you have any idea?
No. No.
I mean, this is going to be one of my first questions to those guys tomorrow.
Right.
Is why? What did he do? I thought about those five freshmen who came in. to the Senate. Freshman senators, not freshman members. Right. Freshman senators.
Well, there were six. There were six, but
I didn't count Sylvia Garcia. I'm talking about the five at the beginning.
Right.
So Hancock, Paxton, Schwertner, Campbell, Taylor. Little heard from, honestly. And Hancock kind of seemingly littlest heard from it.
Right.
You know?
I thought they were relatively quiet. There must be.
I thought so too.
Sometimes Texas Monthly does some sneaky stuff. There's some, you know, quiet
sneaky
intel.
Stole somebody's lunch out of the refrigerator or something.
Right.
You know, you never
had
know.
Had some real James Bond kind
pushed
of
me off the pushed me off the slide in third grade.
And
you
then,
never
of course,
know.
Putting Combs on the list is kind of like, don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Right.
Right. Right. I mean, and again, to reach outside the legislature.
You know, I would have voted for her.
A non-legislator.
She gave out my Social Security number.
You're still mad. Get over it, Ben. 3.5 years.
The NSA already had it.
I'm still waiting to.
Facebook already had it.
I'm still waiting to find out that I've, you know, bought a brand new car in Russia somewhere. So
the IRS wants to talk to you about that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be interested to read that right up and to talk to them about that as well, because it is really unusual for them to go off the list into the realm of non-legislators. Right.
There were some that didn't make the list that, you know, I was sort of assuming would be on the list. I guess the top of that is probably Ryan Guillen.
Ryan Guillen, based on having. Showed himself to be untrustworthy to his colleagues, right?
That's they sent him to a conference committee and said, you know, we're going to send you to this conference committee if you'll promise to do this and this. And he said, okay. And he went back and not only didn't do that, but went in the opposite direction and came back and then denied it on the floor. And they basically called him out, and they were so mad at him that the House, even people that were for his position of the bill, voted against it because, you know, so you have offended our honor. You know,
not a very good Ken Sheets impression.
Well, somewhere between Foghorn Leghorn and James Carville, but basically he violated the code. And I thought, you know, sort of
but
knowing
but
how
violating the code is exactly what, the way you get on the worst list.
Well, yeah,
I was going to say violating the code is like how you end up on this list. I mean, if he's not on the list, who else? You know, did any of these people violate the code in that kind of way?
Well, Stickland among the freshmen for not being willing to be quiet.
I mean, you know, freshmen don't really count. And Stickland...
I thought we didn't put freshmen on
the list. Well, freshmen don't end up on the list. And I'm not suggesting Stickland should be on the list. Right. I'm saying that the argument would have been, in theory, that the proper way for freshmen to behave is seen, not heard, be quiet, listen, you know, more ears than mouth, you know, the whole thing. And Stickland obviously wasn't willing to follow anybody else's script. And that would have, I thought, been a reason for this particular...
Maybe he could have gotten
happened, but not.
Right. I was kind of surprised Donna Campbell. I was surprised Donna Campbell.
And then another one would have been Donna Campbell.
Right.
I mean, if you are going to put on a freshman senator.
Yeah.
But she didn't do. I mean, she really didn't do anything. I don't know if Hancock passed any bills or tried to pass any bills.
Give them credit. The magazine. Give these guys credit. Burka and Brian Sweeney, Eric Greeter, and Sonia Smith. This is still a relevant list 21 years later. You know, 21 lists later, 40-plus years later.
I actually think the write-ups are more interesting than the list. We've talked about this before.
We're not going to see the write-ups for a week.
Right. It's kind of a mechanism for looking back at a session and saying this was the session that was. And mm-hmm. that's always, to me, the more interesting part.
There's an intellectual framework for talking about what happened.
Right.
So we'll see.
Do we want to talk about Bull of the Brazos before we go?
Is that it, Reeve? Sylvester Turner.
Yeah,
what
did he do, good and bad?
I'm a little surprised. Well, I don't know.
You know, force for evil, force for good. I mean, you know, what was the
force for evil part?
Maybe killing HB 11.
He was up there during the debate about the double dipping debate about, or the conversation about, you know, lawmakers getting pension raises.
Right.
Remember that day?
Right.
And he was up there basically saying to some of those guys who
I
were
deserve
saying,
the money. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Jason Isaac who was saying, I don't want to go back to my constituents and say, you know, I voted for myself to get an increase in my pension. And Sylvester Turner said, you know, you don't have to accept it.
Well, you know,
he got a few lines and some ethics stories around the end there.
Right, right. He was the guy that, you know, the House Bill 11 thing. He was also the guy that, you know, if Perry comes out claiming I got my tax relief, you know, attribute a lot of that to Sylvester Turner's dealings on the Universal Service Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but for that, they wouldn't have Perry's number. But for that, they probably wouldn't have the budget deal that they got at the end and the water deal that they got at the end. So, you know, I don't know what matches that on the downside, but, you know.
I sort of feel like Sylvester Turner always should be on that Bull of the Brazos list.
Well, I think the argument you could make is that Sylvester Turner, unique, well, rare, let's say rare among the Democrats. You know, we were talking about Craig Washington earlier.
Right.
Ross. Craig Washington was on the very first list back in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
And what Ross said about Craig Washington, Ross is the official historian of the podcast, is that Craig Washington was one of the few Democrats back then who could get up to the microphone and turn an argument.
Yeah, one of the few people in the House, Democrat or Republican, who could walk up to the mic and actually change the
Turner is somebody who still can get up to the microphone and turn an argument. Sylvester Turner has the kind of moral compass and the passion.
The oratory.
The oratorical skills, the rhetorical skills that very few people in the House do.
I
can more easily make a case for him, would have made a case for him as a best for being the conscience of the House, blah-de-blah-de-blah. I'm curious to see what they say is the basis for him being on the worst list.
He's not on the worst list.
I mean, for being a bull of the Brazos.
Yeah. You have to have done something.
The worst part of the best and worst part. I'd be curious to know what that's going to be. I don't have any idea.
Right.
Well, we'll all know soon. Of course, you can come to Trib Live. I guess this will go out Wednesday afternoon, so you can see what's happening at Trib Live. And actually, can you?
I don't want to say a word about Audible, which you didn't do in the middle of the podcast?
You know, Reeve didn't send that to me. But if you go to audible.com/Tribcast, you can sign up. That's true, it is. You can sign up for a 30-day free trial and check out all the great
audiobooks
that they have there podcasts.
We should suggest Erica Greeter's book today, right, in honor of the best and worst list, Big Hot
Who
Cheap
reads
and
it?
Right.
Is it Trevino? But who reads the...
There is no way not to see that as a slam, Ben.
I'm just having some fun here.
On behalf of...
yes, thank you. On behalf of Evan and Ross and Emily, I'm Ben. Oh, and Todd, thanks so much. And Reeve will be back next week.
Join us next week on the Texas Tribune's Pukecast.